Jo Muirhead, and this is the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast, a podcast for health professionals who want to know how we continue to serve our patients and our clients without sacrificing ourselves to the work. More than a conversation on making money or just burning out, this podcast has been created to progress conversations that we need to have to ensure that we know who we are so that we can serve those who need our help, so that we can actually be the significant difference in the world. And welcome to another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast. It is I, Jo Muirhead, the host of said podcast. And today I'm going to be interviewing my husband, John. And his name is John Drury. Sometimes he's known as John Muirhead. He doesn't like it when he's known as John Muirhead. We don't have the same surname, and that's quite okay, people. You know, the world hasn't ended. And we are the parents of the Smudge. And the Smudge is our very much indulged caboodle, who I've just understood is not in either of our offices right now. So, John, before I get stuck into asking you all the questions I want to ask you, can you just share with us a bit about who you are and what you do to help people these days, right now, in this
moment? Okay. Hello, everybody. And I'm Jo's husband.
Smarty pants.
I do a few things, but I work as a business mentor. And basically, I call myself that. So I have run a large organization in the past. I've run small businesses, and I bring that experience as well as some coaching training and lots of reading and tools that I've got I bring that to my clients. We were mostly small business clients, so 5 to 50 staff, helping them basically grow their business, get their team growing and functioning well, and then working at helping them get some life back. So that they're not caught up in their business 60 hours a week or more, but so that they actually, their business starts to serve their life. That is one of my mantras. And that's a big part of what I do. And then I also mentor some high achievers, helping them think about how they become a consistently high performer rather than just bluffing their way through because they're pretty good at a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you very much. Now, for those of you who are listening going, oh, that's Jo and Jo's husband. Jo must be so lucky to have somebody of such caliber as her husband who can ask all those great coaching questions, and she must get great coaching advice all the time. A really good coach holds you accountable, and that can be really uncomfortable. And that's all I'm going to say about that right now. I love John as my husband, but he is an exceptional coach and mentor. And I have watched him work with businesses and humans for a long time. And he has this incredible ability to help people realize their own potential with incredible integrity. He holds up a mirror to make sure that we're actually doing the things that we say we want to do in a way that we say we want to do it, which is usually about honoring ourselves. And I guess I want to talk into this concept today of high performance versus high achievement. Because we as health professionals, and you know health professionals, you've worked with me, you've worked with some of my clients, you've worked with other businesses, you know that we like to think of ourselves as a unique breed. And we will often use language like, I'm an overachiever, I'm a high performer, I'm an overachiever, I'm a high performer. And in the past, I've been one of those people until you started to help me understand that that's actually not where you want to end up. So can you kind of help me understand or help my audience understand what is a high achiever and what is a high performer?
Okay. So my version, my answer to that question, a high achiever is someone who's got used to they're used to being successful. They're used to making things work, and probably the education system suited them, or they got out of the education system and then found that they were actually good at stuff, whereas school told them they weren't. but they've learned to do well, that they can do well, they can make things happen, and they're usually good at a lot of things. So the challenge with that is that they can rely on that ability and can start to bluff their way through. So they in the midst of things that they say, well, I'm not quite sure what we're doing here, but they look like they've learned that they can make it. So they act certain. They act like they know what they're doing, and they usually get through and usually do pretty well. And so they're winging it, and probably inside that feeds an imposter syndrome a bit, because they think, well, I managed to get through that. I have no idea how I did that, or I'm grateful that it worked, but I don't. So the high achiever can rise to the occasion, they trust their own ability, usually has good ability, and can make things happen most of the time. The challenge, and that's in their work and around their life, when they put effort in, they usually get a result.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between a high achiever and a high performer, in my view, is that the high performer is there's a consistency to it. A high achiever will rise to the occasion, make things happen, but then other things around their life are not necessarily organized or in place. So they've not got things in place to be consistent about that. And so to rise from high achiever to consistently high performer, you actually need to make sure your life is working together, all the aspects of your life. I call it integrating. I don't believe in work-life balance. I wrote a book about that. You can see it right there behind me.
For those of you who are not watching the video, John wrote a book called Integrate. It is a book. We'll put a link in the show notes. Just letting you know, we've got people who won't be seeing this video, John.
Pick up. So I have learned personally and in all of my working with people over many years now, that the things that undermine us or sabotage or get in the way of our success usually come from the neglected areas of our personal life rather than from our competitors or from business conditions or whatever. So it's a health issue or it's a relationship breakdown or it's a 14, 15-year-old child that no longer wants to relate and is kind of running amok. It's aging parents that we weren't ready for to be looking after. Maybe it's that we had the business going well, but we've never had any wealth creation strategies. We've not thought about that until it's too late. All sorts of things. So I've to be a consistently high performer, you actually have to be deliberate about things consistently. A high achiever can rise to the occasion and then move on to the next thing. But a lot of their life will be a bit chaotic. And some people think that's normal. Some people like that. They think that's okay. They plan their work. They rise it and confident in their work, but the rest of their life kind of just happens.
Yeah.
And that can be good, but it also can be disastrous.
So having been the high achiever, right, it was very obvious to you and then became obvious to me that it was my crash and burn. I would rise, I would take charge, it would all be about me. I was the only person who could solve the problem. I was the only solution to the problem. We got through the problem. I solved said problem and then I crashed.
Yeah.
And that's just not sustainable. That's not high performance.
Yeah. And very hard to work with that person.
Well, yeah, because we're chaotic and it's like walking around on eggshells. It's like, how's she going to be today?
Well, yeah, that can be about mood or temperament and so forth, but also don't follow any regular processes or pattern. And so to build a team, you need to have a lot of things consistent to empower people to function. So you'll tend to always be the bottleneck in your team if you're a high achiever rather than a high performer. Yeah. You won't learn how to work through people, which is the key to leveraging an organization or any business.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll always spin around you, and you'll be the bottleneck, and there'll always be a ceiling on your business or on your life.
That's so powerful. I want to help people understand that bottleneck component, because so many of us have come up from, we've been solo clinicians, so it has been all about us. And we, without any genuine leadership or management or operational training, we've built a team. We don't really know what we're doing, but the team still functions, but it's all about us because the business is still all about us.
Yeah.
And then we get tired or we get burned out or we get resentful or we get frustrated and the team stops performing and we blame the team But really, we haven't learned how to work through people. So you talked about this bottleneck, and don't use me as the example necessarily, but what types of things have you seen where people, the owner or the leader in the business is the bottleneck? What sorts of things can you see in that business happening?
Well, okay, numbers of things. Communication all has to go through the business owner, and then they complain about how many emails they CC'd in. but they, if something happens without their knowledge, they freak out. So there's communication becomes, they become a bottleneck in communication. Decision making, it never gets, people aren't empowered to make decisions. They're empowered, like given responsibility, but not much authority. And so that's a recipe for frustration for an employee. If you've ever had a lot of responsibility but no authority to actually make things happen or make a decision to change something, that's incredibly frustrating, and it means that you everything comes back to the owner every time. And I've had business owners complain to me. So, well, they come to me like to spend $300 on something. I said, well, have you ever told them what they are empowered to make a decision about? How much money can they spend in their area? Have you ever talked through that? Have you got a decision-making matrix in place to know, okay, which decisions need to come back to the boss and which ones don't? No, they don't even know what that is. So that's two examples, decision-making and communication, but all sorts of things. That if the owner is a high achiever and everything's built around them, they don't necessarily have a clearly articulated vision that they're accountable to, or a strategy for that vision that they're accountable to. So that the strategy could change, and depending on what they get excited about or what conference they went to last week or something. And so the team is always going, oh, what are we going to get into now? And then if the strategy keeps changing, the team start to go, yeah, they're not going to believe you. Like, oh, here's your latest idea. See how long this one lasts. I've heard that over and over from team members. And so nothing consistent or nothing gets built long term. It's all about responding and reacting. And that then falls back on the business owner, and then they complain that they can't get good team members. I said, well, okay, let's look at your team and let's look at how to best manage them. And I teach them how to lead, basically. That's what I do.
Yeah, you do teach people how to lead. And when people understand their responsibilities as leadership, instead of micromanagement, there's a whole heap of releasing that goes on. So help us understand some of the examples of where a micromanager, because none of us wanted, we're all going to, people have heard that word and they've switched off right now and they've gone, oh, that's not me. Yeah, probably is. Let's be honest. If you like control, it probably is. If you like certainty, it probably is. If you like significance, it probably is. So what sorts of things need to change in a person, in the leader of the business, for them to stop being that high achiever and become a high performer? What are some of the things that you deliberately work on with them?
So to me, it comes back to what I call self-respect. So you've got to build your business around who you are, what your vision is, what your values are, and what you're good at. And then you need to be aware of what you're not good at and be okay with that, because none of us are good at everything. So that requires a level of security at core that's the missing part. Most leaders who, or people that you're using language you're using today, you're high achievers, but not consistently high performers. I'm not saying this is a blanket statement, but often it's the case that they're insecure. They don't want things happening in their world that they didn't do, or they didn't okay, or that they didn't come up that long. That's a good idea, and I'm owning that idea now, and it's basically my idea, even though it came from another. So people in the business and the team are not necessarily free to suggest things. You're quick to criticize and put things down and be a bit negative about stuff that's not working, but not necessarily creating an environment where people take ownership and want to contribute and bring ideas, where it's, and no idea is a bad idea. but you're able to talk about stuff where you're secure enough to be a bit vulnerable and say, listen, this is where we're at right now. I'm not exactly sure. I don't have a fixed plan about how to get to where we want to go. I know where we want to go because our vision's clear. I don't have a fixed, clear plan yet about that. I'd love you to help me. You're good at this. You're good at that. So they understand and they've bothered to get to know their team, and they know what they're good at, and they pull that out of their team members by being a bit vulnerable about what they don't know, or especially if they know that their weaknesses, they're not good at putting all the steps in place. Some people are great at vision and knowing where they want to go, but they're not necessarily good at all the steps. It's actually rare to have both abilities.
Well, I'll put my hand up there. And we talk about this a lot. I am great at vision, and my vision is usually, and I can come up for a strategy for the vision as well. It's like, this is the way we're going to get to where we want to go. What I'm terrible at is the linear A to Z steps.
Yep.
And we know this for a fact. As soon as Joe tries to give direction at an A to Z level, I confuse people, I irritate people. And it's so funny because my team now, I have a team of people who are performing highly, and they go, Joe, can you just leave us alone to do the job? Like, we know where you want us to go. We know you've given us the outcome that you want. Can you just leave us alone? Stop trying to tell us how to do it.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm being helpful. Like, I want you to do it this way because that's the only way I know. And I'm going, I'm being so helpful. Look at me. I'm being so helpful. My team will love me. Meanwhile, they're reading instructions or hearing instructions from me, and they're going, what the heck just happened? Who is this woman? Has she had enough coffee today?
Yes. And you've become secure enough to say, okay, happy to step back, let you work it out. Or do you need any help? Ask the question rather than tell.
Yes.
So, and that's a big difference. Move from a directive leader to more a coaching kind of leader.
Yes.
Who draws out the best in people and asks questions about things rather than telling them what must be. So that core, if you respect yourself enough, others will respect you much more naturally. You won't have to demand respect, you can't. But if you respect yourself and look after yourself and put good boundaries in place in your world and aren't always reacting and responding and everything else, but you're fairly deliberate about the way you do things, then others will respect you more easily, and things can work. You can empower your team. The other thing is you've got to then get the team on board in their roles and make their roles about the outcomes that they are meant to deliver for the organization rather than about a list of tasks or about the amount of time they put in. So if they're delivering the outcome and they do it a different way to you, who cares? As long as the outcome is delivered and the goal is achieved. And that should be how it is. So get an agreement about the outcome and they get them to own it and then let them go and say, if you need anything, check in, or you check in occasionally and say, how's it going? But it's not about telling them how they must suck eggs, because that's
The Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast is proudly sponsored by Purple Co, the Purpose for People company. If you or someone you know is struggling to make sense of the world of work, of employment, after a diagnosis and injury, or they're recovering from some type of forced change in their world, then the consultants of Purple Co are the people you want to engage with. Learn more about how we help people take back control of their lives by visiting our website, www.purpleco.com.au. And I know you're working with a lot of people of a similar generational age, where we're so used to the clock in, clock out, where it was easy to measure performance because a person turned up at 9 and they finished at 5. And the pandemic showed us that most people don't want to work like that. Most people like that. Most people these days, and a lot of our Gen Xers are going, they're entitled, they haven't earned their stripes. Because, you know, we've got employees or who are sitting there going, just tell me what you want done and leave me alone to get it done. So how do we help ourselves shift? Because that was so uncomfortable for me. And that was about me not feeling like I was in control. How do you help somebody like me shift from being I need to see it all, touch it all, see the clock in, see the clock out, look, track the KPIs every day? I mean, that's how I was taught. That was my national management role of, you know, I got chastised if we were under budget by 0.2 of a billable hour on a Monday. Like, how do you help someone like me shift to an outcome-based direction? Because that feels risky.
Yeah, it does. It would feel risky with that background. But it's about knowing the person. You've got to build a relationship with your team. You've got to know them well, understand their capabilities, understand where they like help, where they actually like you to be involved and where they like you to back off.
Back off.
Basically, it's little by little. It's trust grows little by little. And if they perform well with this much, you give them more opportunity. You got to keep focused on the outcome and not try and control the process, unless the process is really critical to the business in some way. And there's
for us as health professionals, we need to have a process where the outcomes, it's not just about how many clients did you see today. It's like, did you provide quality care? Are your notes up to date? Are your plans up to date? Have you done your insurance billing? Have you, you know, reported to all the people you need to do? Like, it's not about skiving off or not doing tasks, but it's also not about going, hey, John, I noticed that it's Tuesday morning at 7:30 a.m. and you're under your budget, like you're under your outcome performance by 0.2 of a billable hour yesterday. What are you going to do today to make that up when you've still got another 4 days in the week? Like,
yes, if you're on like that, then you're likely to have them. What they're going to do today is quit or feign sick leave. That's totally unhelpful. I think I'm a boomer rather than a Gen Xer. And I've never managed people with that kind of intensity of micromanaging. That's I hope if people do that, I'm sorry. that's the way it is.
Well, yeah, we do it because we've come from agencies or government departments or really large corporations but this is the way, because this is still back in the Industrial Revolution when we had that whole time in motion study done, which is irrelevant now. It's so old, outdated, it's not useful. But that's where we came from. So we don't have any other template to follow.
And okay, well, what you must do these days. If you want, and maybe why so many employees are disengaged and struggle in the work environment and leave their bosses rather than their jobs. They might love the work, but they hate the environment. So it's so important that you learn, build connection, relationship, get to know the person, actually care about who they are. That's so important. Find out a bit about what they're passionate about, what fires them up, you need to not become their best friend, but have meaningful conversations consistently with them so that you get to know them at a deeper level. They're your key people. And then help them understand how what they do serves the organization. So this is how what you do makes a difference in people's lives and helps us as an organization do what we do really well. But it's got to be about something that matters. If my job is just doing a whole lot of stuff that really only matters when I don't do it properly, that's so bad. So it's got to, well, how does what I do every day make a difference in people's lives, not just make money for the company? How does it make a difference in people's lives? If they can't see that, they're not going to be engaged or put in. And then, but as you help them with that and then you find out stuff about them, say, well, if you've got any ideas about how to do this better or about how we could explore more things, happy to hear them. And make sure there's a two-way street. It's not just telling, but it's receiving. And then in the team environment, create that too by setting a tone and being a bit vulnerable, being secure enough to say, hey, I need you guys. I need your help, but I don't have all the answers to everything. That's actually empowering to say that. It might feel like you should know everything, but if you, everyone knows you don't. So why?
And it's obvious, right? It's like, I know I was that leader who felt like I needed to know all the things and do all the things, because if I didn't, then that somehow diminished me and people would. But it wasn't until I started seeing the capabilities in other people, I'm like, I would never have thought to do it that way. That's such a better way to do it. Why aren't we doing it that way?
Yep.
Can we please make that now the standard?
Yes. Yeah.
But I want to speak into this thing, because you talk about being vulnerable, and I think we need some wisdom here, because as leaders in our businesses, we should not be going to our team members and spilling our guts. This is not, we don't have a temper tantrum. We don't talk about other employees. We don't bitch and moan about competitors. So how do we be vulnerable and share what's going on and not be unwise? Like how do we learn to do that? Because there's not a checklist.
No. Brené Brown's the queen of vulnerability, and that sort of she's made this topic. She's articulated this topic so well. But she says that she doesn't share stuff she's going through. She shares it after she's gone through it. So to be real, you don't just pour out your problems that you haven't sorted out yet. You might, if where it's relevant to your team, you might say, well, yeah, I've actually been through a difficult time in the last few months. You might have noticed a little bit. I hope I haven't been a problem or, you know, whatever. I hope it hasn't hindered the work in any way, but I've been dealing with a bunch of things in my personal world, and you don't have to share details, unless you want to. But so share things after you've gone through them, or lessons learned, but be a bit vulnerable about stuff that mistakes you've made in the past, or things that you've had to learn. Not to say you've learned everything, but this is a process where I've had to grow and learn. And this environment here is hopefully one where you can grow and learn, and where mistakes don't get caned, or chastised, but it's an opportunity to learn. It's okay. Well, this has happened. It's a shame it's happened, but how can we learn? What can we learn from this? And maybe a mistake made twice or three times, that's then something that's got to be talked about in a different conversation. But honest mistakes that are made by people who just didn't know, or they're learning, or they went too fast or whatever, that's a learning opportunity. And again, you've got to come back to being secure enough, deal with your own emotion. You always got to deal with your own frustration or emotion first, and not put that on the team or put that on the individual. So you deal with you first and then deal with the situation. It's basic conflict resolution. Then you deal with the conflict inside you, then you're better placed to deal with conflict between people if you've got a conflict between employees. So it's about dealing with you. So to me, to be an effective leader and a consistently high performer, you've got to be able to lead yourself really well. That's to do with managing your mood, managing your emotions. Your own emotional well-being. So your social and emotional intelligence is really critical, to be aware of yourself and manage yourself, to be aware of others and manage others. That's the whole realm of social and emotional intelligence. And they're the skills. It's funny, 15 years ago I started as a business mentor, and it was very hard to sell that kind of service. Now people are lining up and saying, hey, can you help? Because they're realizing that social emotional intelligence is so critical to people management. Anyone who's working with and trying to build people's teams and motivate people and get an environment where people love to be every day, whether it's in the room or on Zoom or wherever, but a workplace that people love to be at, which is what we all aspire to, you've got to learn how to build that, and it requires really high levels of social emotional intelligence. The good news is, whereas IQ, the way IQ is worked out, your intelligence quotient, it's kind of a fixed thing. I think it's not very useful either much, but social and emotional intelligence is the skills you can learn. Yeah. You can grow your social emotional intelligence, and it's where we should be focusing if we want to manage and lead people.
And if you're a health professional and you've just tuned out because you went, I'm a health professional, I'm a mental health professional, I know everything there is to know about human behavior. No, You know everything that there is to know about pathology and about diagnosis and about treating something that is a problem. And I see this all the time. I meet so many health professionals who have poor social and emotional intelligence because they're not used to dealing with healthy people and creating healthy environments, because we spend all of our time working with really unhealthy people, helping unhealthy people come back to some level of normal, like how they can function in society. We're not used to building teams of healthy people who want to be healthier and become better. So it's not a judgment, but I just really want to help health professionals understand you can't switch off from this conversation. Your social and emotional intelligence, if you can't keep staff, if you can't recruit staff, if people don't want to stay with you, if you've got people, all they want to do is earn more money, and they are lost in the vision, you've got to start asking questions about your leadership. That's uncomfortable for you to hear. I've done my stuff. I had to live that journey. John's done his stuff. He had to live that journey.
Yep.
Go on, honey.
One of the laws of leadership that John Maxwell's written a book, called 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, Leadership Laws. But one of them, and the one I like the least, but it's because it's true, it's that you attract who you are, not what you want when you as a leader with your team. So if you're not getting the kind of people that you want on your team, or you're losing the ones that you really would like to have, the issue is not them. The issue is actually here. There's a personal growth journey to be had, because you attract who you are rather than what you want. And when I first read that book a long time ago, I didn't like that one. I liked a lot of the other laws, which made sense to me, but that one didn't make sense until I realized it was true, and I had a lot of growing to do.
I don't. That's uncomfortable. Thanks for that. That was where I kind of wanted to end the podcast today, this interview today. But I don't like it, John. I don't like it. So there's some insight into what our relationship is like, people.
I don't coach. I learned a long time ago, and don't try and coach Joe. Support, love, encourage. No, okay.
Thank you. Yeah. But I have heard, because we often work from home, so I've heard many of your conversations, and I've met people that you've worked with in the community who really value what you do. And you've got this incredible 18-month program that takes people from being a high achiever to a high performer. And I guess, you know, when we came up with that program, because we talked about it together and your delivery of it, and then seeing people come through to the other end of that program now, I'm like, whoa, yep. That's cool. I wish I had invested in that, you know, 15 years ago.
It's incredible privilege to work on, because I love working with very smart people who just want to work on themselves and realize that there's room to grow, and to be able to walk with them for 18 months as they conquer a few of the internal issues, mostly internal, some external in their team and so forth. But it's a privilege.
Yeah. So it's an 18-month program. I just want people to understand this. This is not something that will be fixed in one coaching session. Just enjoy it. Because people will often come to us and say, I just want one coaching session, but here's the list of the 99 things we need to deal with in this 1 hour session. And you and I are just like, oh, Lordy, I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, okay, that's true. So, John, how could people get a hold of you, learn more about this program, and find your book? Where do they go to do that?
My website is John Drury, Drury, .biz. And
yes.
There's an author page where you can get the book. It's on Amazon as well. If you want to go there, you can get an online version for your Kindle. And my High Achiever to High Performer program is also mentioned on the website. All my details to contact me, book a call. That'd be the best way to have a chat and for me to understand a little bit more about who you are and what your needs are. And then I'll tell you whether I think I can help you or not. And that would be great to talk to you.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. So, John, we have coffee together quite often. So if we were going out to a cafe What would you be ordering? Because this is my question I ask everybody. So I'm going to ask
you. Okay. We have coffee together. I often make the order. Mm. And I have a flat white and Joe has a double macchiato. And they always bring it out and give me the double macchiato because they think it's a male drink and the flat white's for the girl. But no, you got it wrong. I don't like coffee that strong.
It's okay. There's no judgment. But I know. So anybody who wants to buy John a coffee, it's a flat white. And if you're not in Australia and you haven't got a clue what that is, you need some education, people. it's all good. Wow. All right. That is the end of this podcast episode. Thank you so much, John, for sharing so openly and allowing me to share vulnerably with the people in the world today. Until next time. Go be your awesome self. And that is another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast done. I just want to say a big thank you to all of the people who make this podcast possible. Debbie, Annie, Vince, and Jen, you are my A-team. Without you, I couldn't make this work. And in the spirit of respect, please ask for and receive permission before you use any of my intellectual property, because you know what? Not giving appropriation to creators is just not cool. Until next episode, go be your awesome self. Oh, and before you forget, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That's kind of important. Go do that.